Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm really excited to have Bill Cospell here, CEO of Frontline Source Group. And Bill, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and then we can get into the conversation.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Dean. Yes, I'm the president and CEO of Frontline Source Group. So we're a nationwide professional staffing agency and executive search firm. It's our 21st year in business. And we specialize in the professional side of building those relationships and putting great people with great companies. So we like to look at it as the basic core food group, if you will, the infrastructure, administrative, clerical, HR, legal, IT, and accounting, finance. And then from there, we branch off into a lot of different niches. But it's been interesting because our 21 years of doing this, I started the company as really a focused IT company. We were going to place ERP, SAP systems, developers, specifically in a niche. And we laugh about it because 21 years later, we've never placed anybody in that type of a role. So it really never went that way. Instead, it went with the direction of what the client need was, which led us into life sciences. It led us into grocery. We have a grocery, we place grocery store managers, which is just niche stuff. I run a dental group. We place dentists and dental hygienists. We have just followed the path that has been led to us by our clients in building those relationships. And it's been a fantastic 21 years. And just every day, it's something different.
Yeah, just prepping for this podcast, I was like, I want to talk some questions around people, AI, and stuff like that, because I'm a little passionate about toning the hype down. But let's just hear. I thought it was like, I really loved like hearing when you guys say, okay, we just don't place people, but we align it with culture, with business objectives. And then, wow, you like guarantee 5 years, which is amazing. We hire a lot of people and I just love that. But like, what's the background on that? And like, how do you, I think it's great. And you want to find like, people are so important for business success. But I just loved how you tie in objectives and culture. Like, how do you do that? And how do you guarantee that?
Yeah, so that I think that's the key right there, the guarantee. And that's the misnomer that we had an issue with. And so we don't call it a guarantee, because anytime somebody says, I guarantee, I can't guarantee I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And so ours isn't a guarantee, it's a warranty. But the story behind it is really interesting, because, and we're in a chapter in a book called The American Entrepreneur that came out just before COVID, where we talk about it, because we were at the car dealership getting our daughter her first car. It was a used car. I do want to preference that. And I was signing everything, and the finance person sitting there, my daughter and my wife, and they said, with this, you get a 5-year warranty. And our daughter looked at me and said, what you guys do, Dad? And I went, no. Why would we ever do that? And it made me sit there and think about it. And I went, why wouldn't we do that? Because as a business, and as every business starting, no matter your size, how do you differentiate? How do you do things that are going to be noticeable in a very crowded space? And so I took it back to the management team and I brought it up, and they laughed at me and said that was the craziest thing they ever heard. And I said, we're going to go to Vegas. We're all going to go. I'm going to get a room at Bellagio. We're going to sit in the room. We're not going to leave until we come up and figure out how to do this. And I think half of them said, we're going to Vegas, and didn't hear the other part. But we did. We went to Vegas. We had a room at Bellagio. We locked ourselves in there for a day. We didn't come out. And we figured out how to change it. And so the standard in our industry is like 60 to 90 days.
Yeah.
And what we found is that from a sales perspective in the industry, we sell on the negative. The whole reason of the guarantee was that they were selling it that people would fail. And so when we got in the room, I'm big on analytics and numbers. And even back then, we were already doing it. And so we knew that the fact that our people didn't actually fail, that was pretty rare. What actually happened was that they got promoted within the first year. And so we came up with a plan that said, hire them, they're there. And after whatever time, if they get promoted, we would replace them and then give you this major discount because we're going to replace the same position. But then what we did was we built in the warranty, and we built in, instead of 90 days, we said over 120 days. And then from 120 to 5 years, if something happens, which it does, which will be my next point, then we'll do the same thing. But that really wasn't the point. The point was, why do people sell on a negative about things? And we turned it around and we turned it into a really big positive. And so every quarter, we update our stats on the website of the percentage of people that actually get promoted and stay longer than just a year. And those numbers are crazy. They're unbelievable. In fact, we recently had somebody reached out to us. We placed 15 years ago and they're like, hey, I'm still here, but I'm actually going to retire and they need to find my replacement. We only placed one person with that company in that whole time because they didn't have a need, like an ongoing, but that person stayed. And then they finally came back to us, which was the goal. But also on the website, the government puts out a number every 2 years and it talks about tenure with people. And I think that was the big thing that people didn't realize, that the average tenure of people in a position are between like 1.8 and 2.9 years. And so the reality is they're going to leave, not because they did a bad job or you want to get rid of them. It's just the statistical analysis shows people don't stay. But also what's happened, especially over the last 20 years, and as we talk about AI, is that the mindset of the employer 20 years ago was they look at a resume and they go, oh, they were only at this company for 7 years. That's not enough time. They're only there for 3 years. Now, no, we want people that have been in the same job for 10 years, 15 years. Okay, it's not the way it is. In order for companies to grow and expand and to change, they have to really learn about new things that are going on. They had to learn about changes in the workplace. The best way to do that is to hire people that have worked in different environments. And so hiring in the mindset of looking for people with that 10, 15 years at the same place, it's out the door. Unless you're an AS400 developer and that's all you've been doing for the last 25 years and they need to hire another one like that because they're not going to change, which still happens, it's pretty rare. And so we were able to show that companies had to change the way they were doing things. Well, interesting, COVID hits and guess what? Everything changed. Everything changed about the way we looked at people, the way we look at the tenure, the way we look at job changing every few years. It's more acceptable today than it was before if you can explain the most important question, which is the why. And what we ended up with after we launched it was being ridiculed and told, you guys are stupid. Why are you doing this? You're killing our industry. To us saying, oof, we've opened up a hornet's nest, which tells us it's going to work, to having COVID happen to today, where it now is something that we can negotiate with. We can figure out some people don't want 5 years. Some people only want two. Okay, we can do that. It gives us really that ability to tailor it now into what the client need is at the end of the day and to show them we have the numbers. We can show you exactly what it is. It doesn't matter to us. It's not a shell game. We're not trying to pull a fast one. It's reality of what's going to happen. Do you want to make an investment long-term or just short-term? And then having them come back to us and go, man, that was the best thing ever. And we're like, yeah, we told you it would work.
Yeah, that's great. Cause yeah, I mean, we worked with recruiters in the past and sometimes you're just like, they're just trying to place people, not taking as much time to get the right people. And yeah, by you guys standing behind it, I think that's just fantastic. And yeah, and when I was researching your company, you guys are like in the last year, you guys grew really fast. Like 25%. And that's awesome, at least in headcount. And good job. I've never heard of that before. That's why I wanted to bring it up. And so, yeah, good job there.
Like I said, it's the right thing and it's working when people in your industry bash you. So I'm like, bring it on.
Nice.
They can't figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's the secret recipe is how do you actually do it and make it work? Because everybody wants to make money off of something. And reality of it is for us, it's not short term, it's long term.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, how has AI affected like how your customers are hiring people, how you view the market? I think you have probably an interesting perspective in the industry, where you are in the industry as a business, and like, how has that affected everything?
You could talk about this for like hours, right? And I start that discussion off to set the baseline tone. 45 years ago, my father brought home the first microwave, and it took four of us to carry it in our house. And he said to us that in a year to 2 years, we wouldn't have chefs and cooks in restaurants anymore because this was going to put them out of business. And I'm pretty happy to say 45 years later, Denny's and IHOP have plenty of microwaves and they still have to have a chef. And that's the best analogy I can give.
Love it.
That AI, just like a microwave, it's going to disrupt what's taking place, but we're going to adapt and we're going to learn how to work around it and live with it at the end of the day. So going to your question, what has it done? It's been an interesting about 18 months because that's about how long, maybe even 15 months, that we've really been as a society deeply ingrained in AI. We're at the infancy of it. We're at the beginning of it. What we're hearing today versus when it started is a little different. We're hearing more about it's not the end all. It's not going to fix everything. You absolutely still have to have people. Is it going to eliminate jobs? Absolutely, it's going to. I was a paper boy and delivered newspapers as a kid. That job doesn't even exist anymore. So it's going to happen. That's part of evolution. That's part of technology and us embracing it to be more efficient at what we do every single day. It's going to make us better, just like the microwave. Now, I don't necessarily cook my meals in every single meal in the microwave, but it's even before this podcast, I quickly am in between calls, was able to warm up my lunch real quick and get something to eat. I didn't have to wait for the oven to warm up. It's the same thing. But the problem that we have today with AI that's different than the microwave is that AI is making it very simple and easy to not only build, but to create and to come up with ideas and thoughts about how can we do things. And it's so simple that everyone can create AI and be involved in AI to create agents to do tasks and to eliminate things, which is a good thing, in my opinion. We now have a world of entrepreneurs out here with opportunities to really make things better. And so embracing it and learning and understanding is fantastic. But from a marketplace, HR departments and businesses are bombarded every day with something new, a new shiny squirrel. Try this, do this. This will be better. This is going on. And it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming to businesses. It's overwhelming to us as individuals. It's overwhelming if you're in the career space looking for a new job. The way we did things in the past to how we do it today, it's hard, but it's baby steps. We embrace AI. I'm a tech guy. I embrace it. We test. We try. We get rid of. And so if we don't, we're going to be left behind. We have an AI recruiter. Her name is Joy. Joy recruits 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. She does interviews at 1, 2, 3 in the morning when it's convenient for people. She can speak. She interacts. She's like seventh generation. We've been testing before people even knew about Truly from an AI standpoint and ChatGPT 2 years before the first version ones. We've always done that. We've always been on that cutting edge. She's pretty good. I'm not going to lie. Pretty scary. And she anticipates things that are at a different level. But what she misses isn't there yet. And I'm not sure in my lifetime it'll be there. I'm sure down the road it will. But she doesn't have the human touch. And there is a piece of hiring that is called the human touch. And you have to have it. Now, if you're a company who places individuals in warehousing and manufacturing, and you send them out 100 at a time, and you just need to know they're breathing, then it doesn't make a difference. It's going to make a difference to weeding through, getting to people, because it's more difficult. For us, we place people one at a time, higher level, professional, skilled individuals, a different niche area. That human interaction and touch, that conversation, it's, you have to have it on a human side. That's where it's always, it's going to be there until they come up with a way to have empathy and grace and understanding from a machine. I've read some things and actually looked at a few products that are developed specifically in China right now. And it does scare me a little bit, but I don't know that we're going to embrace it here as much. Companies want a lower cost. We all know that. And the pool of talent that they used to call it no longer exists. When COVID hit, but if you think about COVID hit, unemployment went to, let's call it 15%. I think it was 13. Let's call it that though. That still meant 87% of the people were working. That's still a lot. So at 4.2, 4.5, that's not even close to being something that can replenish what we need. And so you don't have the skilled workforce. Now throw in, there was a big conversation about the H-1Bs and the new fee being charged. And I think they thought people would hire more internally for those roles, which would be fantastic. If we had, you know, the stock, if we had these individuals sitting on a shelf ready to go, it's actually going to cause it just to be, we're going to go have to figure out how to get over offshoring again until we get the talent back in the pool. AI is doing a lot of coding. It's doing an immense amount of coding, but it's also making an immense amount of mistakes. And so until these things are proven and fixed, it's just not going to be 100%. And then you're still going to have a human overlooking it. No different than we have a human that overlooks the microwave. So are you going to trust AI 100% to do your taxes before you submit them? No, you're not. You're still going to look it over. You're going to have someone else look it over. And that's where I think we're headed next. I think next year, the discussion about AI within the HR field will change more to the function of screening, weeding through, and the process of that experience, which from a recruiting standpoint, we focused on and we do every day, the experience of the candidate, the person looking to make the job change, or the employer looking to hire. That experience for us is so important. I think you're going to see a more of a change within HR departments to figure out, how do we make that experience better utilizing AI? Because we still need that human touch. So to your question of disrupting, absolutely. It does it eliminate recruiting? Not necessarily. In the last 12 months, have companies, what major layoffs took place within recruiting? 100%, because they overhired. And they also overhired just to push bodies. And these people were way overpaid, by the way. So it was a good thing for companies to do it. And then companies figured out, how do we do more with less? Which is exactly what they've been doing. But the worker today, they're tired. They're exhausted. And they need to hire. And what we've seen, even in the last 30 days, is a pretty big uptick. In fact, I will tell you that today alone, and we're at the end of September recording this, it's been a really big uptick today in just requests. In one day, half a day, the number of requests that we've had with new clients and hiring that's taking place. So we're fingers crossed that we go into the fourth quarter and have an incredible fourth quarter, because we really all need that to a positive here to come out of some things.
Yeah, I appreciate that answer, because big tech is hyping everything a little too much. And then business owners and leaders hear it and they sometimes make the wrong decision where they think they can reduce staff or do that, but it's really working with and not this even. And as you've outlined in your answer and everything, yeah, it's going to replace some jobs, but it's so wrong to swing that pendulum. So I'm glad that you answered it in a more balanced way, because no, it's working with it and people are key and it makes mistakes and the tech is getting there. It's going to keep getting better. But I'm actually curious. You said, what are you scared about? What's China building that you're scared of?
So China is building they've taken it a step further with these robots that they're creating and building, right? And so human looking, We went through a phase with the receptionist at a corporate office, let's say, being replaced with the mobile iPad that was on the stand that moved around.
That didn't work.
No, it was like I think Big Bang Theory did a show on that one time about it or something. It was horrible. And people looked at it because it was like, how do we eliminate this? And how do we bring it like almost into a call center environment? Well, they're now creating these robots that have very human-like features that they're moving around and they're walking. It's just not the robots that you're seeing that they're going to put in factories that look like a scene out of the movie iRobot. They're pretty scary looking that they're human features. And so when you start thinking about that's when you start looking going, okay, now they're making it where they truly are something that companies are looking at that they could put at a front entrance. It's going to be awkward. I get it. But as technology improves, as it moves, we're going to get there. But I still don't believe that empathy and grace. And those are two really powerful words when you think about human beings and you translate that into technology, into robotics. That until we cross that, it's difficult. You can have an emotional response, but is it really going to be, oh, I'm sorry you're having a bad day? Or is it going to be like, oh, sorry you're having a bad day? I mean, it's those inflections. How is that going to work? And can they do that yet? But yeah, we've seen a few things that just make you go, okay. The other side of it is 20 years ago, a receptionist, we would get that call all the time. Hey, we need a $10 an hour receptionist. Yeah, good luck today. They're $30 an hour, if. And then most companies have figured out how to not do that by having an IVR system with their phone system so it can translate through. Normal. It used to be, why aren't you answering phones? Why do you have that? We were like that for years. Finally went to it. Why? It made it more efficient. We were able to direct people in the right place. It actually works better, I think. So we've also, as society, adapted and made changes. No different than we've adapted and made changes to the fact that we do video interviews. Sometimes we don't get to an in-person thing until all the way to the end. Sometimes we, because we're remote in different locations, and we've adapted to that. COVID made us open up a little bit more. Working remote, never thought that would happen. So I just think the scary part is that we've just gone through a change that was a 20-year change. And it really was. Technology-wise, where it used to take 2 to 3 years, something new would launch. It would take 2 to 3 years for companies to embrace to the change. Man, we're at now 2 to 3 months sometimes, 2 to 3 days. It's just, it's rapid. Difficult to know what's going to be out. That's what scares me.
So like we hire product managers and product marketing managers, and we really want them really deeply skilled in AI, leverage AI. Like, I'm sure all your clients ask you, okay, I want to hire this position and I want them to be really skilled in AI. Like, how do you guys like test for that? Or how do you ensure that? Or everyone, like every software company out there says, we have AI. But that doesn't mean they have AI. So I'm sure every candidate may say the same thing, but how do you look at that to help your customers?
That's a great question, because that goes down to the interview process. That's the first part. But I'll answer that along with what we can do, right? So if you're embedded in AI and you understand developing and what's now called no coding, which means I'm going to code with AI. So I'm not I'm a developer, but I'm not coding with that. I'm not writing the code. So does that make a difference in the pay ranges? If you're a true coder and you're hard coding, yeah, because you can be 200,000 plus easily, right? To find somebody who actually knows and understands it. Where a no coder, you're closer to the 100,000 range, makes it more affordable for a small to medium sized business. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you're familiar with AI and what you're doing, there isn't necessarily right now, and it's coming, a set guideline of steps or testing to put a benchmark, let's say. What it really comes down to is understanding prompts and how to write prompts correctly. So if you're from a technology standpoint and you claim you're in AI, that testing is a matter of saying, okay, our interview is now, we're going to share some screens and I want you to write out a prompt and here's what we're going to look for. And I want you to develop this from a no coding standpoint. And let's see what you understand. Now, what we went through though, over the last 2 years, and especially with COVID, was we went through a lot of ability to do an interview and have AI running at the same time you're on a Zoom call in the background, interpreting the conversation to produce the answers to the question so that people could read them off. It works fine for the person who's doing that, trying to pull the wool over someone's eyes, until you call them out and ask them, all right, now you're going to do this. And then, by the way, we want you to fly in and we want you to sit here and want you to do it, because that's the only way to really prove it. Showing me test examples of products that you have produced, items, agents, what have you done? Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. Obviously, you need to validate that as well. But that knowledge base of understanding, how do you develop, how do you create the prompts? It's more hands-on than ever. And I don't see, we haven't seen a tool yet that's out there that's a testing model tool to test the skill base that's reliable. There have been a couple that have been out there. They just haven't been reliable to validate an end product, because what you really want it to do is to create something for you to test to come back to. So I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult long-term. Short-term is a better way to put it, because long-term they'll have a solution. But right now, as we're testing and going through it, it'll actually be more reliable probably than old school ways of doing things.
I'm a big believer there's a lot of different software out there, even before AI, to help test for skill and culture, and maybe not skill, but actual culture. And are you a strategic thinker? Are you a doer? Are you all those things? Like, what I'm being in the space, is there advances with AI for mapping culture and understanding the whole critical thinking and other things that these tools test for? Or is it that we're still waiting for advancements leveraging AI?
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's always something kind of brewing on the backside of somebody wants to come up with a new idea. Somebody wants to come up with different ways to look at culture, to figure out how do you create these high performing teams? How do you create, we've been through the DISC test and everything else. And I think that the online models, and they'll figure out how to come up with some things that are going to be reliable at the end of the day. What I have seen, there's a tool that Patrick Lencioni has, famous guy, wrote the book, the five dysfunctional groups within the organizations. He's got a test that's out there that does embrace some of the AI function. It's still a manual test, and then it comes back, but it's wonderful to evaluate the team. And it doesn't make it as difficult, in my opinion, as difficult as a DISC test, because it brings it in. I know like a DISC test also is embracing AI to be forecasting and looking at things. And that's where it gets interesting, because the cultural side of the questions that we ask to match that cultural piece, we drill into certain questions and areas that are proprietary to us and the way that we operate. We took, I don't want to call it textbook interview questions, but that's the best way to put it. And we created lists before AI of questions that were non-traditional yet compliant to EEOC. How's that for the best way to answer that correctly?
What's EEOC?
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. So the federal government.
Okay.
We took the questions and basically created questions that were legal to ask, but non-traditional in manner. Okay. And when someone comes in the interview and or we're looking at a resume, it's just a flat piece of paper, right? It's only going to tell me so much. I need to dig in. I need to go to a place sometimes that people don't want to go to. I need to go and dig in to figure out, which our number one question is the why. We use the why as the question that answers almost everything. But then there's a set of questions that are extremely non-traditional that we want to dig into. And those questions that we came up with, they're our recipe. And I will say that we now utilize AI at least semi-annual. We've done it, actually just did it recently, over a quarter, to put them through AI, to have AI dig into them deeper and come up with some additional things to ask. Because matching that culture without testing an entire team and environment, matching that, see if it's going to be a match to our client, it's the same type of questions we ask with our clients to understand the culture. So those questions are asked on the back, on the front with our client, so that when we're on the back with the candidate, we're seeing if it's going to be a mix based on what our client has been telling us. So a lot of companies in our space, they do a call and they're like, oh, here's the job. Here's the description. I'll send it over to you. I need a person. We won't do that. We won't take a job like that. We have to do a discovery call. So I know we've been working with you for 10 years. When can we get on a call and schedule a call 45 minutes to an hour? And if they say no, we're out. Because you can't fill a position and get people to stick by just doing and filling a body. That's the problem today. So when we get a client that contacts us and says, hey, yeah, I've got three other agencies working on it. Nobody can fill it. My first question, why can't they fill it? And I'll hear this. Oh, they just can't find anybody. All right, let me take a look at what you've got. And then I look at it and go, okay, something's not right. Why can't they fill it? I need to get on a call for 30 or 45 minutes and talk about this. I don't have time. There's your problem.
So what, when you say why questions, like what's an example? Is that like in the interviewing process you ask why?
Yeah,
it's great.
Everything.
It's great. It's great when you have that problem because I believe in why too. If you ask why enough, you'll get to what you don't know and what you know. And
here's a great one for you. Ready?
Yeah.
Dean, why did you want to have me on today?
I wanted to have on today. Do you want me to answer? No.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, that every question,
it's a good question. It's a
is
really
a
good
why question, right? Because you're trying to pull and learn information. And
yeah,
you're trying to, and use it in your own life. Right? You got a yard guy that comes and they mess up. Somebody like, why did you do that? Your kids, why are you late? Why are your grades? Why aren't you doing this? We use why more than we realize, yet we don't focus on it. Instead of going through and having an interview with a potential new hire and going, so tell me, how did you do that? Don't do the how. Walk me through, why did you work on that project? Why are you interested in working with us? Why do you want to leave the company you're at? Those are all the most relevant questions to the employer. Why is the position open? Why have you not been able to hire someone? Why are you not involved in the hiring process? Why is the hiring manager not involved? Why do you have turnover? Why do people leave? Why would people want to work there? You can go on for hours.
Yeah,
obviously going to be other parts of the question. But the why is the most important question of all that you can ask.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's some, I think our listeners and will appreciate that. It makes the person think critically about things. And then you can hear how their what their thought process is. And you learn so much more.
They can't answer with a yes or no.
Yeah.
And so the one thing that we don't want to have happen with AI is that we forget about communication.
Yep.
That is the most valuable tool we have and separates us in the world. That an animal has a difficult time really communicating with us. We need to be able to communicate. We have to communicate and continue to communicate between people. In order to solve and resolve issues, problems, and to grow, we have to talk. We have to have conversations. It's the root of all problems and evils in this world.
100%.
So instead of wiping it under the carpet, address it, communicate, get people to talk to you, have these conversations, understand all of it. Why did you go to that college? Why did you go to this? Why didn't you go to college? That is a question you can legally ask. Do you understand how much that opens the door to someone? Why did you not go to college, Dean? The reason I didn't go to college was that I was raised by a single mom and I was having to work to help support my brother who has special needs and had to go to a school. And at the same time, I was working two jobs. Never going to be on a resume. Never going to know about it.
Love it.
Do I want to hire that person or do I want to hire the one that tells me I never worked a job my entire life. I've never done anything. This is going to be my first job. And by the way, I want 20% more than what you're offering.
I love it. Love it, Bill. Love it. So, Bill, is there a question I didn't ask you that you wish I would have asked?
No, I think we deviated a lot of different directions. Now, I think people today, I will tell you, if they're looking at getting back into the market, a lot of people are on the sidelines right now. And that's what we've been through this year. And it's about to bust loose. Everybody's
afraid.
Why
are they on the sidelines? Why are people on the sidelines?
They're afraid. They don't want to be the last one in case everything tanks. And so we've been waiting for the sign that things are getting better. It's pent up, and they're ready. the little drop in interest rates, that was fantastic. That helped. Today, we had our weekly unemployment numbers. They came in way lower than what they thought. And then our GDP number came in way higher than what they thought also. This is a good economy right now. And we don't know about tariffs. I get it. But we're solid. We are moving forward. Knock on wood. Nothing negative happens. When people get the feeling they're ready to get back in, I'm gonna share this right now, and I don't get paid extra or something like that. There's only two places right now that are valuable. If you want to get out there and look, you have to be on LinkedIn. I cannot stress it enough, and I'm not a big. I really don't love LinkedIn, and that'll probably get me banned. But you have to be there. Yesterday, I was on a call with a group from our bank, and they're merging. And one of these vice presidents is going to be let go, but he's staying on to help the transition. I'm like, wow, that's noble. People don't do that anymore. I go, I'm not connected with you on LinkedIn. He goes, I'm not on LinkedIn. I'm like, dude, you got to get on LinkedIn today. You have got to be on there because it is the place to be. So make sure you're on LinkedIn. Make sure your information is updated. Make sure you are connected to at least 500 good connections. 50 to 100 isn't going to cut it anymore. Get about 500. Get people that are relevant to what you do. Comment on people's things. Be interactive, engaging. Start putting that groundwork. That's where recruiters and companies go to look. Second piece with that, if you're on social media, lock it down. They are 100% going to all the social media platforms, are going to Google. They're looking people up. If you've got something negative on Google, attack it head on today. Even if you were never found guilty, but you were charged, I am telling you, they're looking there. It's an open field and market for people today. Be ahead of it. Do not be behind it as you go into it. Second area would be, there's only two job boards out there really anymore. Indeed and ZipRecruiter, if you're going to put your stuff on a job board. Monster and CareerBuilder, they merged and then filed bankruptcy this year. It's not the place to be. AI is driving all of this. Those three are AI driven. So having a presence on LinkedIn, which is owned by Microsoft, do I need to say more? It's AI driven. So being on there, being active, best thing you can do. When you get on LinkedIn, Frontline Source Group, go look us up, follow us, be a follower. We post almost every day articles, information that's going on, let alone things we're working on. You need to be in the know of what's happening. And so make sure you align yourself the correct way. We would love for you to go to our website, same name, frontlinesourcegroup.com, submit your resume information, get into our system. That's the other piece to tell you guys about. It's not the same anymore. You just don't go to an agency, knock on the door and walk in. We can't handle it. So you need to understand that things have changed. If you haven't been in the job market in the last 5 years, you're going to have a learning curve. But most have made it easier, like we have. You go online, get submitted, submit your stuff on and to the other boards, get active. When something is available, they'll reach out to you. And when they do, make sure you show up. Don't ghost people. Do not do it. There is a large group of us that share that information on ghosting individuals. I will warn you, companies are just as bad. Agencies are just as bad. It's been pretty bad lately. And so make sure you align yourself with people that understand the importance of that, that have systems in place. That doesn't happen. We all make mistakes. Things happen. But you know what? When we set an interview for someone and we have to reschedule twice because somehow their dog died and their grandmother in the same week and then we don't hear from them. It's amazing how every Monday we get at least 20 emails from people that have flat tires and can't get to our client. And then usually every Wednesday or Thursday, we get the next one that says they can't show up to the on-site one because they just had a death in the family. You would think this country, it's ridiculous. We've got razor blades on every highway or something. I don't know. But be consistent, be professional, and it's a different world. It's difficult too. It's not easy. So remember that. And like I said in the beginning, differentiate. You've got to differentiate from others. Handwritten thank you cards goes a million miles. Yes, send an email right after an interview. But I will tell you, when my mail comes every day, it's stacked. And on the top, it's always sorted. And on the top are the handwritten notes. And it's the same way that companies do it. They open those first, make an impression, differentiate.
That's some really good advice, Bill. Yeah, that's great advice. I was going to say, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they? But your URL is what, frontlinesourcegroup.com?
Just frontlinesourcegroup.com, or just Google Frontline Source Group. It'll pop up right away. And then, like I said, on LinkedIn, and connect with me. Go ahead and put a connection to me as well and mention that you saw or heard it here. I would love that. That would be fantastic. Make sure we get you to the right person or help you through the process along the way as well.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, well, that's some really good advice. It's your own personal brand, and you need to manage that. So, yeah. Bill, thank you for being on the show. Really appreciate it, and great advice. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Very much an honor. Thank you.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data-Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.